Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino, and we are back with another interview on our Black Voices of Survivor series. And today we're going to be talking with Sabrina Thompson-Mitchell, and she was the runner-up from Survivor One World. She has a great deal of experience of being a filmmaker and working in the media, and we will touch on her unique perspective here in this podcast coming up here in just a moment. Earlier this week on Wednesday night, I also was able to participate as a sponsor in a panel that was held with some of the LGBTQ alumni, really focused on intersectionality. And that was a really great panel that was put together by Jatia Hart, featuring Bryce Isaiah, Zeke Smith, Vince Mawa, Lyrsa, and also Missy Bird were the panelists on that panel. I got to do the introduction there on the live stream. If you missed that, that panel is up as a podcast if you want to check that out as well in our podcast feed, which was a great thing to be a part of. And speaking with Jatia, I know she's looking to do more roundtables coming up in the future, and looking forward to helping to get that message out as well. All right, I'm very excited to bring in our guest today. That she was part of our roundtable that we did a couple of weeks ago, and she had a lot of really great stories about her experiences working in the media. And so here to talk with us some more, the great Sabrina Thompson-Mitchell.
Hey, Rob, how are you?
Hi, Sabrina, how are you?
Hey, I'm just trying to hang in there through this pandemic and all the other stuff going on in this crazy world.
Yes.
It's fascinating.
That's one way to put it. Sabrina, what part of the country do you live in?
Okay, so I just moved from Brooklyn, New York,
yes,
to Houston, Texas.
Okay.
Definitely a big
out of the
difference.
Frying pan into the fire now.
Hey, we're right. Yeah, but it wasn't as much as a cultural shock as what I thought. I'm originally from North Carolina.
Okay.
Did 18 years, but after I left and went off to college, I spent literally 20 years in New York City. So it's kind of like the South raised me, but the North made me, and now I'm back down in the South. So.
Yeah. Can you share a little bit more about your background? Because I feel like that from Survivor, that when you were on the show, that I believe they said you were a teacher. Is that accurate? Because then learning about everything that you've done since Survivor, I'm wondering, like, were you involved in working in media from pre-Survivor? And they just, like, sometimes they'll say, like, oh no, for the show you're this.
You know how it goes, Rob.
Yeah.
So at the time I was a teacher. However, for 7 years prior to me being a teacher, I was a producer for scripted television, for reality shows, for talk shows, you name it. And then towards the end of that working in media, I really worked in hardcore news covering molestations and murders and international war crimes of Saddam Hussein, you know, looking at it from a court perspective, you know. So I was in court looking at serial killers run down how they would murder like 40 people, just ridiculousness. But what it did is it gave me a really good insight into how the justice system works and all of its glory or unglorified elements. And so, but what it did, it just became so heavy for me. And I literally would have a sandwich in one hand, eating lunch in a newsroom. In the other hand, I'll be flipping through a thick report, looking at autopsy reports and yelling across the newsroom like, oh man, my guy got decapitated, or my guy got stabbed 55 times. And it's just like, okay, this is enough. This is absolutely crazy. And so I just felt like, you know, I was making nice money. I was traveling around the country. I was covering really important trials and news stories, but I didn't feel good about what I was doing. I didn't feel like I was contributing to society. And literally, Rob, one day I was on the subway and I looked up and it says that there's an ad on the subway and it said, change someone's life, become a New York City school teacher. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Like, no way, you know? And so, and the thing is, it's like, you cannot escape it because the whole train had like the same ad printed mm-hmm. 8 times. And then I literally went to a website, kind of looked at the application, filled it out. And it was a special program for people who just wanted to jump ship from their current careers yeah. into education. So if you worked on Wall Street and you dealt with economics, you might now be a math teacher and so forth. So I went into high school teaching seniors public speaking and debate, but also English. And so it was just an eye opener. It mm-hmm. was, and I didn't know how long I was going to be there. I knew I was going to be there for a few years, but what made me pivot out of teaching was this great opportunity to be on Survivor. So yeah, I don't think it would, you know, I think lots of times being executive producers and story editors, they want America to either like you or hate you. There's no real in between, you know? And so, and I get it, trying to create a story. And so I think they like the storyline of it's like, hey, you're a black teacher, inner city, trying to make a difference. Let's go with that storyline. And I got it versus, oh, this is a young producer who travels and makes nice money. And you want society to be able to pull for you or not yeah. pull for you. So I get that. Yeah, and then I just took the money that I got from being runner-up and I invested into my media company because I knew I wanted to get back into media, but only under the premise where I would have more creative control. I would tell the stories of people whose stories just were not in the media, or if it was in the media, it was so misrepresented or underrepresented that I wanted to be able to shed light on that. And it just so happened that I happened to get paid to travel the world and to tell stories for large and small companies. And, you know, times are shifting. You have more of the internet versus people that were watching television. So they'll much rather have short form content. So that's what my company specializes in, telling complex issues in a short form.
So did you find that going on Survivor was a good springboard to be able to help launch the media company that you started after Survivor?
Yeah, money-wise, for sure. You know, yeah. I didn't have to worry about going in the red, you know, like a lot of companies do the first couple of years. But I think what it did was it gave me some free time that I did not have before. You know, teaching is pretty much around the clock. Being a news producer, we were literally working like 90 hours a week. So I had a time to just kind of breathe a little bit and travel for a year or two and then start collecting the stories and passion projects that I wanted to do. But everything has synergy, Robin. So this is amazing how everything came into play. My now clients were people that I knew that used to appear on, I used to book for television shows for Court TV News or different mm-hmm. talk shows. They now throw business to me and said, hey, we see what you're doing. Yeah, you did a great job in Survivor, but we trust you with our content. And so I always tell younger people, like, you just never know why you meet certain people when you do. Just be genuine and authentic in your conversation. And people always like to work with people that they like or they want to see succeed. So it was, it's been pretty seamless so far.
And is that the main thing that you do right now, is continue to run the production company?
Yeah. So the production company is photography, video, and film. And most of the time it's for, like, okay, AT&T, they need a commercial directed. So I will come in, direct a commercial, and bring in my crew, which is very diverse. And I think a big company like that yeah. likes to see, like, oh, there are women that are directing and that are producing. There are a lot of Black and Latinos on the set. And so that's a win-win for them, right? But on a smaller scale, okay, Rob, if you and your wife wanted me to come in and do like this ridiculous mini movie for your 6-year-old's birthday party, we will come in and do that as yeah. well, you know? But also, for the last 7.5, 8 years, that has paid the bills, that has allowed me to travel the world to tell stories. I do about 10 weddings a year because brides are fucking crazy. So I do a little bit of weddings, just to be able to tell someone's story and document their history. But now I'm pivoting into scripted television. So over the last year and a half, sitting down, putting on my writer's hat, vetting different scripts with my partners and really getting my feet wet into that. And it's just a totally different beast, but I love it.
Can I also ask you about, you had brought up on the roundtable that you also worked on the Hillary Clinton campaign, producing video content. How did you go from somebody who was like an upstart with a production company to working for a major political campaign?
So well, this has a survivor connection, which is crazy. I think what helps me as a small business owner, as an owner of a boutique media company, is that my prior experience was working in news. So I knew how to interview a person, get the short form content, make it sensationalized, you name it, you know. But what happened was Franny Hoagie, she is a good friend of mine. And unfortunately, when I think, God, it was about 5 years ago now, when the 12 people that were killed, I'm sorry, 9 people that were killed in a shooting in a church in South Carolina took place, Hillary Clinton was running for president. And what happened was she took her camera crew down to just give her respects down in South Carolina. And this was a predominantly Black neighborhood. So imagine coming in, you being a resident of that city, and all these people that are carrying cameras, and that is kind of intrusive, wanting your story.
Right.
None of them look like you, you know? And so you're not to say they can't get a good story, but think about how much better the story possibly could be if you're talking to someone that looks like you that may have a similar story. Mm-hmm. So it was not received well. Her camp went back to the table and was just like, find me someone that is Black, that is a filmmaker, that does a good job. And at the time, I mainly specialized in looking at race relations, looking at gender issues, looking at poverty in different communities. And Franny and I share a good friend who was like one of the political advisors for Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
Franny called me. I literally, you know, we were sharing an Uber coming from an event one day. And so she said, hey, Sabrina, like, do you have a resume? So I'm like, resume? Like, I haven't sent out a resume in forever. And so she was like, listen, just put something together. The Clinton camp is looking for a videographer who can just come in, tell the raw story. I want to introduce you to them. And it's funny, when I went to the interview, you know, they were kind of beating around the bush, and I just stopped them. Almost like I stopped the producers for Survivor. Like, listen, I know you need somebody Black. I know you. It's okay, like, to say that. I'm not going to get offended. Just like if, you know, it was a convention, it was all men and all women, and you had a man reporter, but now you want to get a woman reporter. I said, I get it, you know? And so after that, they kind of were able to breathe a little bit easier. Yeah. And so I followed her around the country. And what I mainly was responsible for doing is looking at the stories of women of color and what are their struggles? What are things that they want Hillary to listen to? Should she become president and address? And I just so happened to be paired with the women who lost their children. This is like Trayvon Martin's mom, Sandra Bland's mom, you know, all of these horrific stories, and they were bonded by pain. They were bonded because their children were murdered, some of them at the hands of cops or some not. And, I solely believe the reason why I was paired with these, well, that I was picked for to film with Hillary, is not to capture her. I solely believe now, looking back on it, was just to meet these women and what I have done post, you know, Hillary Clinton and so forth. Because for me, I'm just like, okay, I don't agree with everything she said, you know. But for me, that was a chance for me to document history, and I jumped on it.
Yeah, it sounds like a great opportunity. Are you still in contact with those women that you were working with at the time?
I am. And, you know, their thing is they don't want their circle to grow bigger, you know, because that means that now there's another child that's dead and a mother to join them. I am. Some of them I'm much closer to than others. They actually, about 4 of them were picked to go to Oxford University in England to have like this round table in this great debate hall, right? And so they were really nervous. I went with them, and I think what kind of made them a little bit more comfortable is that I'm just a world traveler. And so with them, they felt like, okay, how do we exchange money? Well, you know, like stuff like that. And so I went with them, but I also documented the story. And I think they think that I'm much younger than what I am. And so I don't really, I'm not going to challenge a 6-year-old Black woman. Mm-hmm. I will not do it. That's like talking back to my mother. But I don't think they realized how big the opportunity was until they actually were introduced. So the student body president of Oxford gets up to introduce them. Just imagine this kind of Harry Potter looking debate hall, beautiful, very ornate. Students are literally pouring off the balcony, just waiting to hear this. And this is looking at, and because you have the element of non-Americans that live in England that have probably read and seen, oh my God, why are the cops killing these black people? You know, so they get a type of sensationalized news, but now they could hear it from the mouths of the mothers. And so everyone was in there. And I'll never forget this. The student body president said, this is the most anticipated forum that we have had since Malcolm X came months before he was killed. And then I think it kind of scared them, like, holy shit. Like, and I said, listen, just tell your story, you know, because a lot of them are just like, Sabrina, we're not the best public speakers. Like, we didn't want to be thrusted into the light. This, I said, just tell your story. Don't worry about subject verb agreement. Don't, you know, just tell your story. People are here to hear your story and to see if there's any type of solution. But yeah, you know, when I don't hear from a few in a while, I know they may be in a dark place. So I'll just kind of leave them a message and let them contact me. But yeah, it's just fascinating their dynamic with each other and then with the world.
Yeah. In terms of the reception that you got internationally, is it more focused on race or is it more focused on sort of like American gun violence?
It's a great question. I think it's equal almost. Yeah. When you hear the questions that were raised by the students and the faculty, you know, their cops don't have guns, you know, I think they have a baton at most or whatever. They just cannot fathom someone walking around with a gun and the authority that's not military to have those rights to walk freely. And just how do we get the guns and so forth. So just the gun trade, the smuggling of guns, all of that, those questions were raised. But also too, the number of black students and Asian students that stood up literally with tears in their eyes saying, and you can tell that they were given the confidence to speak up and ask specific questions simply because the mothers were there. And they talked about the bias that is in Oxford. And then some came from Cambridge and they were just like, but because they're such a minority, they don't feel that they even have the right to speak up. Or if they do, what are the consequences of them speaking up when they know it's either microaggressions or very overt racial things happening in the classroom, in the university. Because listen, I mean, there's colorism and classism and racism all over this world. You know, we're obviously not the only country that experiences that, but to see it within a campus college where it's kind of controlled and, you know, when you go to camp college, you think, okay, I'm here with intellectual people. We're here to better ourselves. But it is coming, you know, everybody's coming from their households, bringing different biases and stuff. So just a social aspect of them, of the women being there for the college students was something I actually didn't expect, but it was really good to see.
Sabrina, could you talk a little bit about the importance of media, specifically right now, in terms of, you know, helping to, you know, shape the perceptions that people have and hopefully, you know, changing things for the better?
Listen, Rob, the biggest and the number one weapon in this world is media.
Yeah.
It is the most powerful thing that everyone can access in a matter of 0.003 seconds. You know, everyone's walking around and in their pocket, there's a TV and a computer, basically, you know? And so I think the reason why media is so important now, because there is a good chunk of people that are just like, oh my God, I didn't know this was going on. Whether or not it's police brutality, whether or not it's corruption within the government, I'm just like, it's always been going on. It's just that now you have access to this 24/7, 365 days of the year. And it's an influx of information, you know?
Right.
And so, and even when people just were saying, you know what, I don't know if people were molesting kids as much back in the day or shooting people. I said, yes, they were. Yeah. Unfortunately, I said, it's just that you didn't know what was going on in North Dakota or Utah or New York, because not that you were in front of a TV, and even then you might not have seen it. So the importance of it is just that now it's not left up to the news to construct a story that the viewers at home may want to see. Now you can easily be a reporter. I can be a reporter. Anyone that has the ability to capture something can can report on something. There is a pro and a major con to that. The pro is that now we see a lot of good things. We see people helping each other. We see people giving back to the community. But we also see the ills of society, you know, and it is right there in front of our face. So right now, Rob, even if you shut off your news and say, hey, I'm taking a 72-hour break, you cannot help but to get that news via proxy, via social media of some sort, mm-hmm. right? And so the good part about social media and television media and so forth is that it is now given a voice to the people that have been misrepresented or underrepresented for years. And Will Smith had a great comment. He said, racism hasn't gotten worse. It's just that now it's being filmed, you know? Yeah. And so the footage of film and video is literally acquitting certain people. So imagine, and there are people just like, okay, I didn't believe that happened until I saw it, you know? And I'm just like, we've been telling you this for years, you know? But now that they see it, they are just like, just flabbergasted, you know? And so it's just another way to document history. But until we look at media with a critical eye, it's just going to be a bombardment of images, a bombardment of information. Until we know how to process it, because there are people just like, oh my God, I don't want to look at this ratchet reality TV show. You know, I'm not saying you have to watch it every day. Watch it and see what the narrative is. Watch it and critically pick it apart. Just like you should do that with news, you should do that with any magazine or book that you read. Always be critical in your assessment. And all being critical is just asking questions. Just ask the question, you know? You may not know the answer to it. You may just want to get, we don't learn until we ask the hard questions. And so even in the school system, I would open up these books that the kids would read. I'm just like, who created this book? You know, why is this only told from this point of view? And so when I was a teacher, senior year, I taught 98% of my students were African-American and Latino. And I said, listen, K through 11, you guys have been reading fiction. Like, let's stop with the fiction. You know, I said, let's read something nonfiction. Let's read something about someone's real life and let's ask questions, pick it apart. Let's talk about social commentary, things of that nature, and cultural things. And I got approval to do that. And so I just don't think there's enough of that in the school system. There's not enough of, you know, looking at history books and just like, okay, whose point of view was this told from? And how come only 10 pages are about Black African-Americans throughout history? Mm-hmm. You know, how come two of those pages are about Latinos? You know, like, how come one of those pages are about Asian Americans? And I think the beauty of this country is that it is a melting pot. And when you think of American, I think of a myriad of races, a myriad of religions, but not all people think that. When they say make America great again, it's just like, for who? Like, mm-hmm. You know, like for who?
When was it great?
Again, when was it great? It depends on who you ask, you know? So it's just... Rob, I can go on and on, but yeah, media is just something that doesn't need to go away. I don't believe in censorship at all. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, say what you got to say. Even the president or CEO of Goya said what he wanted to say. I don't want to censor him. He should have a right to say that, but just know it doesn't come without consequences. And we have to critically assess everything we read and absorb.
Yeah, I would love to hear more about how to do that and how to be, critical of the media that we consume. Because as I'm hearing you talk about this, you know, I think a lot about like the news sources that that I absorb, and I'm trying to, you know, you could watch one thing on one channel and watch something else on the other channel, and it's the complete opposite version of the story. But it sounds like that what you're saying is that it's the first person accounts that might be the most, because that's not like a spin on a person's story, as opposed to like your experience, like working in news, you know, like what, you know, is sort of like trying to, you know, get the attention grabbing headlines.
Right. You know, I think if you only read certain things that lean a certain way, if you only read something that only leans left or only leans right, you're doing yourself a disservice. You always need to know what all sides are saying, right? Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, some of it is organic. You know, there's a great quote by Walt Whitman that says, take everything that you've read, everything you've been told in church, and then something else. I'm really paraphrasing this, and dismiss whatever insults your soul, you know, and deep down in our gut. Okay, whether or not we'll admit it or not, you know something is a little off, or if you need to probe and ask a little bit more questions and say, does it seem right, you know? But again, it goes back to how we were raised. Do you take stuff for face value? Do you believe what your mom says at all costs, even though your mom might be the wife of a KKK member, you know? But I think first things first is reading, looking at several different things, you know?
Yeah.
Also seeing what is their source, you know? Who are they interviewing? Part of my job as a producer in television is I would book the people. I was a booking producer for a short period of time where I booked people to talk from the prosecutor side of a case and from the defense side of a case to make sure it is balanced, you know? And then there's always the person in the middle who might be the juror, who might be the person, the innocent bystander who's giving their account. So it's always, you know, three sides to every story. It's their side, your side, and then the truth, you know? And so you're always looking for the truth, but oftentimes there's a great quote by Malcolm X, and he says, oftentimes the truth lies with the oppressed because they don't have anything to really lose. It's just like, this is our story. This is, and the thing is they have no power to lose at all. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when you look at history, when you look at when stories are being told, always ask from what vantage point is it being told? Okay. Because are they telling this from this vantage point to uphold and to keep power? You know, what are they afraid of if the truth actually came out? You know, yeah. And so I don't think we do enough of that. Why are they asking? Why are they trying? What are they trying to protect? You know, also looking at it as far as who's funding a certain news source, right? Mm-hmm. That is something where I feel like hardly no American wins on. You look at it and it's like 3 to 5 conglomerates that control everything, you know?
And it gets worse all the time. Yeah.
Oh, it does, you know? And so, I mean, I'm a big show of it. And although they will, everything falls underneath certain umbrellas. I'm a big fan of like Vice News, you know? Everything internally that goes on in their company. But when I watch certain episodes, I'm just like, okay.
That's on HBO?
It wasn't HBO. It's now on Showtime.
Okay.
And one of my dearest friends is a reporter there. And I like their structure. They kind of leave it up to like, hey, find something that you want to report on. Not being told, hey, go out and find this story, do this. They kind of leave it up to the correspondents to say, okay, there's a story over in Iowa in the school system no one's talking about. I'm going to go and dig, you know? And so I like that aspect of it. But I think when news comes from a source where people just don't have a lot to gain from, they're just simply telling their story because they want to be heard. I think there has more weight, at least with me it does, you know, because it's almost like the kid who's in your classroom, who's telling out, now granted, kids can run a gamut of feelings and emotions, yes, and stories, yes. But it's almost like the kid who's just like telling a story who doesn't know the repercussions of it, and they're just telling the story and they just because they want to be heard. But you also have the kids that will kind of embellish your story, obviously, you know, and so that therefore you got to just kind of probe and ask the right questions to get down to the meat of the story. But yeah, it's just about being critical, asking the questions of who's funding this. Why do they show this and not that? And so always look at the news source. If they're always showing a certain type of Latino that is speaking, a certain type of Black person that they want to be the spokesperson, a certain type of Jewish person they want speaking, question that too.
Yeah.
You know, like none of us are the same.
Well, I got to be the reporter now that this is so much work to do with the news that it's a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It's powerful though, Rob. Yeah. It's powerful. And we cannot ignore it because it drives everything. It drives absolutely everything.
Do you feel like as somebody who's worked in news, you feel like that you can see where, you know, stories are sort of like being a little bit more shaped?
Yeah. You know, in most newsrooms or networks, obviously they have meetings every morning. They'll pitch different things for the upcoming week. And obviously if you get breaking news, you get breaking news and everything stops. But in those meetings, you see where thing they want you to lean and lead towards, you know, even down to, okay, I booked this guest and I need to do a pre-interview with Rob. And I want, because the thing is, I want to be able to manipulate and control you to say exactly what I want you to say, you know? And I think that's why some of the producers or survivors say, oh God, she's not going to play ball because it's going to be hard. She knows that we're going to try to manipulate her in a sense because they have to sell a story. So I get that point, you know? That was a game though. So I get it. Wasn't really offended by that. But when I'm covering a murder case of a mom whose three kids were murdered by her ex-husband, and I've been asked to intentionally manipulate her so that her answers can come across a certain way, that was like the tipping point for me. I said, this lady just lost three of her kids in the worst way imaginable, yet you want me to produce what she says on TV. Because pretty much anything that comes out of her mouth, as far as I'm concerned, is going to be riveting and raw. And the fact she even said yes to this interview should be enough. But everything is controlled because you have to look at the ad dollars. Who, you know, is it a Tide or a Nike or, you know, a Mr. Clean that is funding this network or this particular show? And that brand has to be on par. I mean, your words or the show has to be on par with what that brand somewhat represents. So everything comes down to money. Mm-hmm. Everything. It's a business. So I get it when it comes down to a game, but not when I'm dealing with like real life issues. Yeah.
So do you have any outlets that you specifically will go to that you, I know you said Vice, but they're not like a daily, right. Like they do sort of like more like special presentations about specific topics. Do you have a go-to source that you feel like is the best at?
I and this is so crazy. I tend to go more to news that's not Americans. I'll look at Al Jazeera. I look at BBC.
Oh, interesting.
It is not to say, I mean, everyone has a slant.
And
to
you
a
go
degree.
To TV for that, or that's podcast?
Both TV and online, just looking at their articles.
Yeah.
So I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, although yes. I'm kind of getting into it lately. Because my attention span is so short, Rob. I'm just like, okay, what can I be doing? So, I don't listen to a ton of podcasts, but I will read a ton of articles and I'll look at different news programs on the BBC and Al Jazeera. Yeah. And even their documentaries on certain things are amazing. So yeah.
All right, Sabrina, don't sleep on podcasts because as a content creator, it's a great medium, especially to be able to, you know, tell a story, whether it's an interview or sort of like you know, talking like a long form, like serialized story. Like there's a lot of opportunities.
How long have you been doing it?
That I've been doing it for 10 years.
Okay, so Rob, you were in it when. You're like an original. You were in it. With, I feel like now everybody and their mom and grandpa has a podcast. I'm just like, I feel like it's oversaturated. Yeah. But for the older people, the OGs, like,
yeah.
I feel like you have a following and that I hate to say that you're just more legit.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. If you had a particular story, though, that was like good for this medium, it doesn't mean that people aren't always looking for new things to listen to. And mm-hmm. you know, I have my very specific like niche that I cater to of like, you know, recapping, you know, reality TV games. But, you know, there's so many different, you know, types of podcasts that are out there. Right. So I don't think there's any limit to that'd be like saying like, well, you know, hey, like this person has been making movies for so long. I can't make another movie. There's so many movies.
That's a good analogy. So true. That's fair. That's fair.
I want to ask you about, you said you're working on scripted projects right now. So what are the types of things that you would be looking to explore in scripted projects?
Well, there are two lanes right now. One is scripted. The other ones aren't scripted, I would say. So the scripted ones deal with I can say this without giving away. It deals with the school to prison pipeline.
Yeah.
And because I've worked in the media looking at prisons and looking at court systems, the legal system, but I've also worked directly with kids in a very underserved community. And how some of them, literally, I went to court with some of them where their parents were working and so forth. And like, who's their advocate, you know? And just saw a whole new world that opened up. And so what happens when the kid perhaps that lives in Malibu that has the same crime as a kid that, you know, that lives somewhere in Chicago, but one parent, one family has money, the other parent doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And but the same crime, you know, what happens when all of that is erased, but their consequences are the same? So it goes into this kind of everything is not what is perceived. These kids go to a certain program and they have to literally survive this program. And so there are elements of survivor that is also in the scripted scripted. It's actually a series. It's not a film. So it's like a episodic series. So that's the most I can. I am literally okay. Talking in circles. So, you know, I just don't want to give it away.
But yeah, I don't want you to.
Yes, I've been in pitch meetings at some really big companies. And yeah, they're just like, holy crap. Like, hold on. So it's this meets that. And I'm just like, yeah. And yeah, so I'm excited about that. But the other projects are more like 30-minute docuseries where they're kind of like a social experiment. So think along the lines of you watch ABC's What Would You Do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's along the lines of that to a degree. So it's just creating scenarios, putting people in very tough, not dangerous, but just tough situations and how do you respond and so forth. But yeah.
Okay.
So I always like, Rob, I like to make people very uncomfortable because I like to, listen, I that's how I grow and I learn. I want to stretch people and get them to ask questions and question themselves. And so, yeah.
Can I ask you about going to Survivor? Was that a application on your part or did you get recruited?
No application. I think that's why I'm not as invested in the show as you know, hardcore yeah. Survivor fans is no, like, so I told you I was teaching. I was like in my third or fourth year of teaching and got a notice from Mayor Bloomberg. Pretty much all the new teachers are just like, due to budget cuts, we're going to have to get rid of like 4,000 cops and 6,000 teachers. And I'm just like, and my name may be on the list. It's like, man, did I just stop my job as a TV producer to go to teaching to get laid off, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just remember not really stressing about it, but just kind of like, I just had a bunch of questions. Literally 48 hours later, I checked my email and in my inbox, and this is an email titled TV Inquiry. So I'm thinking of some of my old buddies that I used to work in TV with, sometimes they have questions or whatever, want me to consult on a project. And then I open it up, it was like this long email. And so it started off with, hi, I'm one of the lead casting producers for the hit show Survivor. I was like, okay, what is this? You know, so I thought it was some of my friends punking me. And long story short, they had pretty much, they were rounding out casting for the next season and they needed two more women, preferably Black or Hispanic. And turns out, Rob, they had kind of already pretty much picked these women. However, they were pulling pictures off the internet for their, I guess, profile to send to Mark Burnett so they can get the final stamp of approval. And the Black lady was like this 65-year-old Bass Fisher woman out of Houston, Texas. Why do we have the same name, Sabrina Thompson? So every time they Googled her to get her picture, my picture came up. I was 33 at the time.
And they're like, we like this one better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, we like this Sabrina better. They didn't have my number. They just had an email to the nonprofit yeah. that I created. And this was the email.
And so now Sabrina Thompson is your neighbor.
Yeah, right.
Look her up. Yeah. You're getting her mail now.
In Houston, right. Yeah, right. And yeah. And I would say 2.5 weeks after that email, I was thrusted on the island of Samoa. And I mean, just listen, I had watched an episode or two before, and then they obviously made me watch some episodes, but I was just in it like, okay, I'm having fun during the summer. I'm not working as a teacher. I'm just having fun. And then But then I went and I said, okay, all right. I have to think through this. And I think what helped me get so far was my experiences as a teacher. You're coming
so far room, in the game or yeah, in the casting. Yeah. Yeah.
So far in the game, because casting, they already knew they wanted me, but they said, hey, just so we can have on file, can you go and do a casting video?
Yeah.
And so that was kind of hard. I had already known they already knew that I was going to make the cast. I had to make one. So it was really easy at that point because I knew it wasn't riding on that video. Mm-hmm. And so, what was I going to say? What was I saying, Rob?
That you went far in the game because you were a teacher.
Oh, yeah. I think one of the main reasons I went so far into the game, and you know, we have that in common where you were a runner up too, right?
Third place. So you,
you were a runner up.
No, almost.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. I just, you know, as a teacher, because some of my students were like, I mean, I taught seniors. Some of them clearly were over 18, but these were young adults. And so imagine juggling 35 to 40 mm-hmm. to 40 different personalities from different homes and you having to keep the peace, but also teach at the same time.
Yeah.
And, different person. And so you have to give them their undivided attention, but also know what's going on over in the corner too, you know, making sure no one's going to strangle someone. So I think Survivor is very much like that. Different backgrounds, different beliefs. You have to kind of validate everyone's belief to a degree to kind of get them on your side. But at the end of the day, it's just, you have a mission to teach the class something. And I had a mission to make it as far as possible. But even then, Rob, you know, we talked about it on the previous podcast, is just coming into the game as a minority. And I don't even really like that word, but just for this sake, is this, you know, you could be the Asian American, you could be the Latino, you could be the woman, you know, you could be the older person. It depends on what cast you're on, what a minority is, you know. When the numbers aren't on your side, as far as, okay, there are less women than men, that's something you have to juggle in your mind. Are there more Southerners than Northerners? All of that, you know, people like to find commonality. And a descriptor in that is race. So just like gender, just like geography, just like race, all of these are descriptors. And when you're put into such a foreign territory, you know how it's crazy when they drop you off. You want to cling on to something that you kind of know. You know, the familiarity of something. So if that means, hey, I went to prep school with kids that look like this, that were from Connecticut, I'm probably going to bond more quicker mm-hmm. with them than somebody from Iowa, right? And so it just so happens to be that race is a descriptor, but it's also coming into what are your preconceived notions about Black people when they come in? Is it that we're looked at as being a workhorse and stronger and less emotional? And so therefore, oh, they're going to be a challenge beast. You know, it's just like, that was one of the first things, like, oh my God, you like a former Olympic athlete. I'm like, hell no. Like I'm a broke ass teacher. So I had to really tell them that, you know, and just the but listen, I have preconceived notions about them, you know? And so I think going into it and, you know, when we have these discussions, I said, listen, because I've been a television producer before, I understand the number one goal is to get a story that can sell. You know, it is a business at the end of the day. If they have to exploit race, they have to exploit gender, they have to exploit redneck versus Yankee, they're going to do that. So you have to go in knowing you're probably going to be exploited. You signed up for this, but how do you play the game that they're going to play the game too? So it is strategy within strategy within strategy. And at the end of the day, because I was a teacher, I did not want the kids to turn on the TV and see me acting a whole fool, which I have the capability to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody has the button to be pushed. So yeah.
And there were some people that were out there that could try your patience.
Yeah.
In that cast.
And you know, and I'm sure people are thinking of Colton. It's so crazy. He is probably one of my dearest friends now, which is crazy. Like a lot of people are like, why? And you know, it's a TV show.
And you gave him the idol, right?
Mm-hmm. I gave him, Yeah, because listen, I knew he was a disruptor, okay?
Yes.
I knew he was kind of like the outcast over in the guys' camp. And I said, listen, let's give the disruptor some power.
Yeah.
And so anyway, listen, he said some pretty vile stuff.
Yes.
About that, like, no one was off limits for him, you know? And he was, I think, 19 at the time. And I had a chance to talk to him after the game or whatever. And I said, listen, I think I took a different approach with him versus had he been a 42-year-old, you know. I said, listen, you're 19. And it was almost as if I was still in teacher mode. I said, you're 19. You haven't really seen a lot of the world. You haven't been around a lot of different people. You're pretty much, from my understanding, regurgitating what you have been taught in your town, wherever you live in Alabama. I said, so there's going to come a point in time where you have to make a decision as an adult to pivot, you know. Well, so you end up hurting yourself, those you love, and so forth. I said, if I come back around in 10 years and you're still saying the same thing, then I'm going to be really mad. I'm going to be really sad. This show has the ability to change even the craziest person. I said, so you got to look at it for what it is. Of course, as a 19-year-old, you're going to, that said all these things, you're going to get crazy things thrusted towards you with social media. I said, just know that anyone can change if they're willing to do the work. In the conversations I have now, I said, listen, that might mean you might lose family members, you might lose friends. But I'm so proud of this, and he's no longer a kid, but I'm just so proud of him and the things that he's just said no to, the things that he says yes to, the questions that he decides to ask. We don't grow until we ask questions. He'll call me up. He said, listen, I feel like I'm safe to ask you this question. I said, okay, Colton, that question is really crazy. Try not to repeat that again. Try to reword that, because most people will take offense to this. And I want people to be able to hear you and not think about beating your face in while you're talking. But I absolutely love him. I can't say the same about the rest. Listen, I pretty much love 99% of our cast. And,
yes.
So it is what it is.
Were you happy with the way that they told your story in that season?
I was. I really have no gripes at all. I told someone, I said, now granted, there are things I'm sure they could have edited in that clearly I said during confessionals, and they didn't. I think a lot of it goes into, they have a loose frame of a story going into what a lot of people don't know. I said, they already know they want A and B to be the villain over there, and they want X, Y, and Z to be the hero edit for the most part. If you stay on par with that, then you don't mess up their framework. But if they feel like you're not being as villainous as that you can be, they're going to poke and they're going to pry on confessionals. They're going to create even more of a villain. I said, but I think they already went in knowing, okay, we want to give this teacher a hero edit. You know, now granted, if I would have gave them something completely nasty, it would be hard and difficult to edit that in. You can't, I always tell people, they can't edit what you don't give them, you know? And granted, I'm an editor. There's a way you can chop it up, but it's not going to be seamless. They're going to be able to tell, like, okay, this person clearly was looking over here 3 days later and they tried to edit that in. There's a way you can tell a number of different stories, but I was 100% happy with my edit.
Yeah.
And I think going into, you know, CBS definitely wants to hear from the Black survivors that played and our complaints and so forth. And I literally could be one of those people just like, hey, screw y'all. I got a good edit, you know, but that's not my responsibility in life. I said, I think, I'm not necessarily with the good and the bad edit. I'm about the authentic edit. You know, if you were a royal bitch on the show, no matter what race you are, you probably need to show that, you know? And so at the end of the day, I'm more concerned about patterns. If they always show the redneck that comes out of Iowa and South and Kansas as being aloof and not smart, then that's a problem, you know? If they're always showing a lawyer as being really crass and just, you know, a slickster, that's a problem, you know? So we're looking at patterns here, not just one-offs. And it just happened to be that there's a pattern that we just are not cool with.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like that your experience, just like knowing exactly, like being so savvy about what the show is and what they're looking for, was just something that really helped just educate you going in, where not everybody who's going to play is going to have that experience?
I think it helped me greatly. Two things that helped me: my past in media.
Yeah.
Because it was my job to kind of read people and, okay, I know I'm going to be able to get this out of this person. And you can read them pretty quickly. You know, I know not even to go over here and ask that person anything, because they're going to have this reaction for the most part. But also too, age is always a big factor. You don't know a lot when you're 19 and 20, 21. You only know what you know, but you're like the most invincible person at that age. And so that was a big advantage for me, that I was 33, but I think most of them thought I was like 27, 28. Mm-hmm. But I had the experience at the time. I had traveled a lot. I'd met so many different people from different backgrounds, heard narratives you can name. And all of those people I was out on the island with, I had already met those people over and over and over again in some shape, form, or fashion, whether or not I went to school with them, whether or not I interviewed them, whether or not they were coworkers of mine. No one surprised me on that show at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you almost went back again.
Yeah. I'm kind of glad I wasn't picked though. I think I wouldn't say everybody, a lot of people want to go back for a second chance, you know? Then I've talked to a lot of people, but because there's a thrill to this game, like none other, right? There is the factor of the unknown, like none other. You can take even the same people, throw them out on the same island again and get a different, you know, outcome. And so I just think the unpredictability of it is what makes people excited. But I talked to people that have gone on several times and they're just like, Sabrina, there's nothing like the first time. It's just, they said, it's not as fun.
Unless you win. I think Jeremy had fun the second time. You know, some of these other people have fun the second time.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And so part of me was just like, I think it was like the second chance show. And I'm just like, God. And literally as they're calling out the names, I'm just like, why did I say I would be interested? Because the only other thing I would have to go back is to win, right? Because I got second place. Like, no one wants to go back and get like fifth place or, you know, eighth place or whatever. And I said, well, you know, it's too late now. But I think also too, while I went pretty far, is that I actually chose to have, like, I had more fun. And then after a while it turned serious. Okay. It was $1 million on the line. But I would say halfway into the show, I was just having fun. You know, I was having fun getting to know people, saw that different people were clicking together, got in with some alliances. But for the most part, it was an experience. I was having fun. Money wasn't on the forefront of my mind. And then when I got halfway through it, I said, you know what? Let me fall back and be quiet and not as vocal. I don't want to be seen as a threat at all. If that means people think I'm weak, and I will go do whatever. Everybody has to play the hand that they're dealt, you know? But yeah, I don't know if it would have been as fun the second time around.
Mm-hmm. Have you examined the petition for the anti-racism petition for Survivor? And do you have any thoughts on the things that are being asked for in that petition?
It's pretty much the same things that are being asked for from all the Black survivors for the most part. We want the main things that stick out to me is what is CBS and Survivor doing with behind the scenes, you know, it's really easy to cast someone, to even to say, oh, we're going to make 25% of the cast Black. That's easy. You know, the harder work is, are you going to employ qualified people of color, Black people, Latina, to actually change the construct behind the camera? You know, there's never been one director of color in 20 years, you know, there's one Black editor in 20 years. There may have been 2 to 3 film producers in 20 years. And then when you get into the women, that those numbers are even more dismal, you know? Yeah. Like, so it's literally like, but a lot of shows are like that, unfortunately, you know, it's really that good old boys club. And part of you have to analyze is this, okay? Is it that they're intentionally doing that, hiring people, you know, that look like them? Or is it such an unconscious bias where, hey, I want to work with people that I like, that I enjoy being around? Most of the time, they're going to look or come from a certain background. And yeah. If you're a white man from the suburbs or from whatever, you're probably going to resonate better or easily with people from that same ilk. So it's just like, but you have to question everything, you know? So was it done intentionally in 20 years? Who knows, you know? But I think these are all questions that need to be raised. But also too, is this like creating the pipeline? What is a pipeline? So do you have schools or programs in Southern California where they're right down the street from the CBS offices? Is there a pipeline of some sort that is created where kids is just like, hey, I want to one day be a director, you know? I think that wins them brownie points for sure. It's an educational component of it. It's going to make your ad dollars soar because people feel like there's a social impact element to your company. And HBO did that well. I was filming an event for HBO a couple of years ago, and they had the executive producers of The Wire. Did you ever watch The Wire?
Yeah.
Okay, so they had them on the stage and I was filming them, and there was a white lady who at the time was an EP of the show. She said, we were filming in Baltimore and, you know, it's a tough show. You know, they show the ins and outs of what happens and so forth on the streets of Baltimore. She said, every day we were filming on the street, school would let out. And she said, you would see all these little black kids get off the school bus or walk. And they were filming on the street that they live on. So they were just curious kids looking yeah. like, whoa, what is this? You know, then you have like the craft truck that is over here that's full of food. And so she said, I don't know whether or not it was just me as a woman, as a nurturer. She was just like, wow, I feel bad that we're coming here using their resources to film and the kids can't even come and look and ask questions. Mm-hmm. So she said what she would use food as, hey, you can come get some food, but you have to be very quiet, you know? And yeah. then it led to like, okay, this is the director. He does this. This is the producer. And so she said, she literally took that back to HBO and said, listen, if we're going to go into certain communities and so forth, why can't we form a partnership with them? Why can't we? And then from there led to a pipeline with HBO dealing with, okay, interns, you know, how many interns of color do we have? But they took it another step further because now you would have the interns on the set of The Sopranos or, you know, The Wire and so forth. But when they would shadow the producers or the directors, none of them looked like them. They were shadowing old white men, basically, you know? And so even then, that's when they started another pipeline. I'm just like, okay, how do we groom these interns to be directors? Or how can we get them to shadow people that look like them so they don't feel like it's not obtainable, you know? And so I just think we have to be very intentional when it comes to stuff like that. But for me, I mostly identified with the petition on, we got to change up how the behind the scenes looks, yeah. for sure.
Well, yeah. I've said this a lot where I feel like that, you know, there's no silver linings in a global pandemic. But I think that just in terms of Survivor in particular, they could have already filmed two seasons of Survivor had nothing been going on with interrupting mm-hmm. the show schedule. And I just think that they have an amazing opportunity to, for the next season that they film, they could mm-hmm. they could get this all right. Could you imagine that, you know, if they had like already, you know, gone and I have no idea what the cast they were going to go out there with, but right. you know had they really had an opportunity to totally miss the moment and come back out with a season 41 that would not be reflective of the moment that we're in. And right. they have this golden opportunity to be able mm-hmm. to say, like, we really got this right. And right. I do feel like that they want to get it right.
They do.
But I feel like that it doesn't mean that they are, you know, always, you know, ready to get it right.
Right, right. But you know what? They're 20 years into the game. It's not like they're a startup show and, mm-hmm. and if it fails, they're going to crack, you know. I think worst case scenario, they try something new. If it doesn't work, they can always go back to what they were used to doing, which they don't want to do, but yeah. there's a safety net that's there, right? Rob, imagine if they took some of the most polarizing things that's going on now. So you have the Democrats versus Republican. And at the end of the day, I'm just like, are you not liking someone simply because they're a Republican? You know, like, or is it because of their beliefs? You know, so you can throw those people out there. You can throw people that hate cops at all, like no matter what, but doesn't really know a cop. Throw them out there together. You know, you see the differences. You have even within a fight, you have. Okay, so you have the whole thing, Black Lives Matter, right? Then you have people that says all Black Lives Matter, because there are certain people like trans sure. Black people and gay, they don't feel included. So like even that, those microcosms can go out there, and it would probably be the most visceral but fascinating episode of Survivor, because these are not typical, I guess, caricatures that they're used to to having, you know? There's a reason why, listen, our season may not have been memorable, but people remember Colton. You know, people clearly remember Colton because he was who he was, right? He was very definitive, and whether or not people hate him, love him, he did not, you know, he was who he was. You know, he was very transparent. And I think if you get those types of people out there that are just where they have no choice but to bond over making a campfire or bond, you know, making a tent or whatever, or winning a game. It's almost like sports where people come from all different avenues of life. And now you're on the team and your common goal is just to win. But through practices and in the locker room, you get to hear Rob's story and how Rob may not come from this home that y'all think he came from, this preconceived notion, and vice versa. And I just think certain things like sports and music are the two unifiers, I think, around the world, where you have people that don't speak a lick of English. And I went to Brazil like a couple of years ago, and I'm filming and I'm going through their favelas, which is just their word for ghetto, basically. Just super dangerous. Sometimes I wonder, like, why did I go in a favela with like two people? But anyway, as I'm filming and turning the corner, I hear Lil Wayne blasting. And I'm just like, what? I hear American rap music blasting. These kids don't speak a lick of English, but they knew every word to that Lil Wayne story, song, you know? And so how that unifies us, or music is a peek into a certain culture. Same thing with sports. So I just think Survivor has the ability to take a big old risk, and they can do it. They're just like the OGs of reality TV. They can do it.
If I could just explore that with you for a second, that just as a producer, though, when you have a potentially like a conflict about some of these society issues that could play out on the show, and the best case scenario is where, okay, this person came in with one preconceived notion, they meet somebody, they have a a teachable learning moment, and they had something similar than like that with the incident with Jack and Jamal in season 39, where Jack referred to Jamal's buff as a do-rag, and Jamal and Jamal talked to him about that, and they came away from that with a learning moment, which was great for the viewers. But what happens if that they have a scenario that doesn't end in a teachable moment? Should the show depict that, or should they try to hide that from the viewers?
I don't think they should hide it at all. Everything's not wrapped in a bow. I think you let that play out. I think the story is on the editing side. You know, there's so many hours that get left on the editing floor. I think you have to be smart about casting when going into a very visceral season like that, where you're going to have you're going to have more polarizing people than not. Then you have to be strategic on who are these peacemakers. You know, maybe it's two or three peacemakers where they come in on the confessional and they help narrate it, and was like, well, listen, this is what I heard him say. This is what I heard them say. But in front of each other, neither one were going to back down, you know, because you do have the people in real society who are just like, listen, I'm not down with this or this. I am somewhere in the middle, depending on the topic, you know? And I think people want to turn on TV and to see them, or to see how they've been mistreated, or to see like, hey, I knew I wasn't crazy. This person has the same experience as well. You're not going to be able to wrap anything in always with a bow and make it make sense.
Not everything is going to be neat. Yeah.
Right. But what it will do is it will start conversations. It will may start a hard, hard conversation that people have never thought of. You are plant this, these types of shows is simply to plant a seed of what ifs. Mm-hmm. What if this was, you know, these people were stranded on the island and you needed them for survival, but you didn't like their stand on abortion. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you going to do? You know? It's like going to work, Rob. Like if you work in our office setting, you can't stand someone in cubicle C.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Y'all have to be productive for the business, but you can't stand the shit they say in the break room. You mm-hmm. know, how do you get through this? And so, and again, it's a game. The story will lie in the editing room, basically, with that.
Yeah. And if you have the right people behind the cameras, then you can have confidence that you're going to be able to accurately depict that story, good, bad, right. or ugly.
Right. Because a certain producer, if you're going for a confessional, if someone's interviewing me that, I don't know, that we just don't speak the same lingo, we don't, they may ask a question. I'm just like, did you really ask that? Like, the better question to ask me would have been this, to elicit a response. So I think, listen, depending on the cast, they may have to have rotating producers. Like, this is a cast that's full of extroverts that come from New Jersey. They're not going to probably mesh well with this producing cast. So I don't know. It could be a rotating producer ordeal. I don't know.
Sabrina, do you have any other things that you want to share with the audience while we have you here? I feel like this has been so fun to get to catch up with you.
I'm actually good right now. I just want to thank you for allowing me the space to talk on a podcast that I need to listen more to. You know, I think at the end of the day, a lot of people are scared in what's going on. The only thing that's scaring me is COVID, you know, and just, okay,
yeah.
Do we really have a grip on that? The other things I really did not think I would see during my lifetime. I didn't think that I would look out and see various protests where I see a myriad of all races, all ages fighting on the behalf of just the betterment of all people. But one thing, to your listeners or anyone that is just very confused on the term Black Lives Matter, that's the only thing I just want to clear up for some people who just do not seem to grasp it. I think when people look at the word Black Lives Matter, they literally process it as if I put an imaginary word like only in front of it. I think they process it as only Black Lives Matter. And I'm just like, no. Perhaps if we would take out the imaginary word you think is only and put two at the end, Black Lives Matter two, you know, because this is the funny thing. I said, okay, if we're doing the whole All Lives Matter, how come y'all are not out there protesting against when people say Blue Lives Matter? You know, like, you see what I'm saying? And I just think if there was a rally that says, you know, equality for the disabled, you would be an asshole to get up in the middle of their protest and say, well, what about able-bodied people? You know, I'm just like, okay, everybody does matter. No one's disputing that. But right now, the people that are not getting justice within the justice system happen to be disabled people. So right now, the focus is just on them. It may be 10 years down the road, the focus might be on gay people, or it might be on, I don't know, people with dyslexia. I don't know. So it's just, it's thinking critically about a situation. No one is saying screw white people or screw Latinos. No one's saying that. No one's saying anyone is better. We're not even here to try to take what anyone has. We just want equal rights. And so why does equal rights translate to some people hey, I want to take what you have? No, we just want to have equal rights like you do. know, and I think when people get into, well, you had Obama as president, I say, you guys have to look at it systematically. No, we don't really look up on trees and see people swinging from trees anymore. We don't see the overt racism, but we do see the systematic racism. And I think these are the hard questions that you have to ask. And I think at the end of the day, if people would just acknowledge the lies that they were told of how this country was built, just that acknowledgement is enough for me, actually, you know. But just to come in and say, you know what, nope, our people did this, you know, you need to get over slavery and so forth. And it's like, do you understand how you have reaped the benefits over centuries because of the history of this country? And I think if you dig down on it, you know, dig down in it, people, they know the truth will come out, but I don't think they want to debunk the stories that they were told, because somehow or another, it might strip their power from them. But yeah.
Yes.
That's it.
Some people like to argue also.
They do. And I just want people to know, when we say Black Lives Matter, we just want our lives to matter too. We don't want to be looked at differently in the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. We want a fair trial. We don't want to be denied a loan at a bank or shown a different house in a different neighborhood when the real estate agents come to us. You know, we just want fair opportunities. That's it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a great note to end it on. Sabrina, do you have any ways that you want people to keep up with what you're doing?
Yeah, they can just follow me on Instagram at I am Sabrina T. So that's I am SABRINAT.
And great handle.
What'd you say?
Great handle. That no underscores.
Yeah, it's just really simple. That's good. Yeah, no underscores. Now, and listen, guys, I'm very random. So you may see me posting up something of me crying at a Drake video, and then the next day I am posting something else with Malcolm X, or you know, something out in the community. So it's just random thoughts.
Yeah. I had seen that you posted the whole domino rally Rube Goldberg machine on Facebook the other day.
Okay. Oh, so do you follow this kid?
No, I only saw because you shared it.
Oh my God, that was amazing. What is crazy is this, Rob. So I had a couple of friends that watched the whole thing. They were just
turned it off. I couldn't. It's like, how many different things are going to happen? I got bored. It was going on so long.
I thought that was a little long. And so somebody was just like, this kid has nothing else to do during a pandemic. I said, he's that's a physics lesson in his backyard. But I thought it was fascinating. I did thought it was going to end on a better note. I said, oh, the ball's just going to go in the goal. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Very random. But hey, this is what the pandemic is producing, all types of shenanigans. Yeah.
Real quick, I like to ask people, what are you watching right now?
Ooh. Oh my God. I'm watching Queen of the South on Netflix.
Okay.
I was super late to that. I just started, and actually, it's just a one series documentary, LA 92.
Yes.
I heard that was really good. So I'm literally just in the first 10 minutes of that.
And that's Netflix also?
Netflix, uh-huh.
Okay.
I'm trying to get my husband to watch The Sopranos.
Oh.
Yeah, he's never seen it. I'm also trying to get him to watch Homeland. He's never seen that either.
But, are you a big Homeland person, Sabrina?
I am. I'm missing the last two seasons. So I didn't even see the last two. I just know Carrie's crazy, but that's pretty much what I'm watching. But everybody was trying to tell me to watch The Floor is Lava.
The Floor is Lava, yeah.
And they said, Sabrina, you didn't play that growing up. I said, what the hell is The Floor is Lava? It's like this. I said, listen, I grew up in the country in North Carolina where I don't know. That wasn't a game that was introduced to me. But yeah, I'm looking for something kind of light. I tend to watch heavy stuff.
Yeah, Floor is Lava is pretty light.
yeah, but what are you watching that might be light?
You know what? I feel like I don't really have anything that I'm watching right now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's sorry. Fair. I go to bed. I go to bed early. It's very.
You're a father of two toddlers.
Yeah, I watch kids shows.
Oh God! Oh no!
that's what we watch.
Are they Paw Patrol?
No, they're a little older than that. But they watch.
Oh, see, I don't know. I don't have kids. Paw Patrol is for little kids.
Yeah, smaller kids. Yeah, they used to watch that.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Well, I have to ask you this, I guess, before we go. Do you guys have Disney Plus?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like that is a necessity with parents and kids of a certain age.
Yeah. So we get a lot of mileage out of that. That's a good deal. whatever you produce next, you can get it on there. That's a good place to be.
All right. It's a win-win, right?
Sabrina, thank you so much.
No, thank you so much, Rob. Thanks. Have a good day.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Sabrina Thompson Mitchell here, and I thought that was a really interesting conversation with Sabrina. Really appreciate her coming on with me to talk some more. We've got a lot of other great podcasts up from this week, including a podcast that I did with a man named Alec Hester. He studies positive psychology, aka happiness. I know that a lot of people are really trying their best to maintain their mental health right now. And so Alec has a podcast with me where we talked about 7 ways to improve your well-being right now. And if you are interested, or if you are struggling right now and could use some tips on how to improve your own well-being, I highly suggest you check out that podcast as well from over the weekend. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of Rob is a Podcast. I greatly appreciate it. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.